By the time of the first snowfall, we were still 100 miles from this place. That was November. Proceeding in the snow was futile. We took shelter in a cave, decided to wait until the storm had passed, but the storm did not pass. The trails soon became impassable, and we had run out of food. We ate the oxen, all the horses, even my own dog. And that lasted us about a month. After that, we turned to our belts, shoes, any roots we could dig up, but you know there's no real nourishment in those. We remained famished. The day that Jones died, I was out collecting wood. He had expired from malnourishment. When I returned, the others were cooking his legs for dinner. Would I have stopped it had I been there? I don't know. But I must say, when I stepped inside that cave, the smell of meat cooking, I thanked the Lord. I thanked the Lord. And then things got out of hand. That was a passage of dialogue from the 1999 film Ravenous. And considering most of us just celebrated the murder and colonization of the people that were here before us by engaging in unadulterated gluttony, and also considering the fact that winter is upon us, and we are officially entering the capitalist hellscape that is the holiday season, I implore you all, when push comes to shove and if times are difficult, consider eating one of your friends or family members this year.
Their legs or something.
Their legs. Okay, now that that's out of the way, this is Gem Hunt, our family horror podcast, where we, the dogs with the most dirt upon them, dig up a movie with less than 5,000 votes on IMDb. We watch it, talk about it, and vote on whether we think it's a gem, or a turd burger, or a gem with a little bit of doo-doo smeared on it.
Ew.
Or a piece of shit garnished with some jewels.
Sparkly.
My name is Cody, and I got your pass hanging.
I'm Buggy, and this is me in the daytime.
Daytime. I'm Beth, and my idea of a perfect day is a food fight followed by a seance.
Mine as well. Okay, so we are bailing. Bailing?
Yeah, we're bailing.
Bye.
On capitalism.
The end.
Bye. We're out.
We bailed.
We gotta go.
End of the episode. We are barreling towards Christmas, and the only thing about Christmas I really get excited about is our somewhat recent tradition of watching the classic 1974 film Black Christmas, which is easily my favorite Christmas-themed horror film, and each year I watch it, it climbs a bit farther up my list of favorite horror movies of all time.
Fucking Barb.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to watch that at some point in the near future, now that we are in December, as of when this episode is released.
What a beautiful turn of phrase.
You know. And I can't remember if we've talked about this or not. And it's crazy to think that we've done enough episodes now that I can't remember what we've talked about or not.
Also, I think if we did December episodes last year, a lot of shit was happening and we might not have because she went to Peru.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. It just, you know, I can't imagine having a podcast where you have like hundreds of episodes. How do you keep anything straight?
I think you say the same things over and over. And then later on, and then the other person is like, hey, you already said that.
Yeah. People on your subreddit are like, they already talked about this in episode 574. These guys suck.
Yeah.
Podcast really started sucking this year when they did that thing again. But anyways, whether we've talked about it or not, do you have any favorite Christmas-themed horror films or horror films that take place during winter? It could be either.
Oh, just winter? I mean, Black Christmas is the obvious. And I really love Gremlins. I like to watch Gremlins every year. Those are sort of my two every year ones.
Krampus, too, I think.
Oh, Krampus.
Like a fun,
we usually do watch one. Krampus, yeah.
Krampus, becoming a classic.
I do love that one.
There's this one, I can't remember, I think it's The Wolf of Snow Hollow, that's like a snow-themed one that like is more of a comedy than anything else.
You might have watched that.
Yeah.
I liked that one a lot.
Is it werewolves?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Wolf of Snow.
Well, I know, I heard that, but it could just be a fucking wolf. I don't know.
it's just werewolf.
Like the wolf.
That's
of
the
Wall
twist.
Street.
It's just a wolf.
That would be cool.
I mean, wolves are scary.
That is true.
Yeah.
What about The Thing?
Oh my God. Yeah.
You know, here's one that people don't think about, but the film Curtains.
Mm-hmm.
That ice skating scene in that movie is
so scary.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, I like that movie.
So good. I don't know. You know, obviously we got The Shining.
Canadian. Yeah.
I talked about Ravenous. That's a good wintertime film.
Yeah, I see now that you asked us about winter, but I was just thinking Christmas.
Yeah, it could be either. You know, that's the interesting thing. It's like Christmas horror films, kind of hit and miss, but horror films set in just winter and snow conditions, I feel like there's a ton of them.
What's that one, The Lodge?
Yeah, The Lodge.
That was good.
Yeah, we need to rewatch that. Yeah. I feel like it was really good. The Children.
Is good.
Agazusa. Is that the one we saw at Hollywood?
Yes.
Yeah. Dead End is a good Christmas-themed horror film.
That's one where they're on their way.
Yeah, Ray Wise. Good old Ray Wise.
Yeah, that's a good movie.
Does The Changeling count? Probably not. Like, part of it is in winter, but then another part's not.
It is a good movie.
And also, I mean, the bad stuff happens in winter. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, fair enough.
There's something about winter that works because it makes people, like, go crazy.
Totally.
Misery.
Oh.
I mean, is that trapped. Yeah, there's a snow.
That's the only reason why
he can't leave.
Yeah, that's, like, the main reason why he's stuck there. Also because his, like, legs and arms are broken and whatever.
Yeah. It's a car wreck, right? I haven't seen it forever. Yeah. Yeah, I do feel like it's like, yeah.
I think it's winter time.
Anyway, it's winter time, and there are a lot of good winter horror films. We're going to see Blood Rage tonight, which is one of the good old 80s Thanksgiving-themed slashers. That'll be fun. We're also going to go see Big Trouble in Little China at the Clinton Street Theater in just over a week.
Oh, yeah, it's Friday.
That'll be sick.
Yeah, that will be sick. I also bought a whole lot of tickets to Pee Wee's Playhouse Christmas that none of us can go to.
Oh, yeah. Wait, what day was it?
It's on a Friday.
Oh, man.
I know. Anyway, never mind that.
Yeah.
I'll be donating them to people who want to go to that.
We're going
to
go see a metal band instead.
Yeah.
Shout out Yob.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Okay, anyways, enough of that shit. We got a movie to talk about. This is a buggy movie. What are we watching? What are we reviewing? What are we looking at and listening to and reviewing tonight?
We're looking at and listening to Sledgehammer from 1983.
Hell yeah, Sledgehammer. This was directed by David A. Pryor, written by David A. Pryor. He's kind of a prolific filmmaker. Filmmaker might be a stretch, but
it's a video maker.
Yeah, he's a video maker. He did a lot of B-movies, a lot of shitty action flicks, but also made the classic Killer Workout.
Yeah. Killer Workout.
Killer Workout. It's very bad, quite fun.
Mm-hmm. It's fun.
Yeah. So this movie is starring Ted Pryor as Chuck. Ted Pryor, that's David A. Pryor's brother.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Linda McGill. Linda McGill is Joni. John Eastman as John. Janine Shear as Mary. Tim Aguilar as Jimmy. Sandy Brooke as Carol. Doug Matley as Killer. What was the other person I forgot?
It's Jimmy.
Jimmy.
It's Joey.
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 Joey is played by...
Who the fuck is Joey?
Joey's the guy...
Stephen Wright. Yeah, that's right. I forgot Stephen Wright's in this film.
As Joey.
Okay, yes. The music and the composer, I guess just the music, was Mark Adams, Ted Pryor, Philip G. Slate. I don't know why they needed three people to make the music in this
one
film.
Key on a synth.
Yeah, we'll talk about that a bit later. Special effects were done by a maybe fake company called Blood and Guts.
Blood and Guts?
Yeah, according to the credits anyways.
Interesting.
Where can you watch this dog shit? Night Flight, Flix Fling, Tubi. For free, something called Eternal Family, which I've never heard of, but it's advertised as the best and weirdest video streaming service that you're not subscribed to. Huh. And I can confirm that I am not subscribed to it. I can't speak to whether or not it's the best and weirdest video streaming service. It's on Troma now. Oh, Fossum! Yay, Fossum! Our favorite Fossum. Fossum gives us $5 every episode to say, yay, Fossum.
Oh, no, we wish.
We're I wish, yeah.
We'd have like $20 by now.
I'm gonna email Fossum and be like, hey, every episode we say, yay, Fossum, can we have $5?
Can you give us some money?
Yeah, and you can rent it on Google Play. Okay, what is this bowl of diarrhea about?
Okay, everyone bear with me. At the very beginning, I want to like just point this out. We get a very long, weird shot of exposition of just like this random house in the middle of nowhere. And like as an establishing shot, I feel like it really does like set the tone for this movie is going to be weird and confusing because also it lasts like a really long time.
They're into that.
Where like I thought I paused the movie like several times throughout watching this movie and I did not. But we get, yeah, this shot of a remote house and we're instantly thrown into this like pretty intense situation where this mother is screaming at her child and basically telling him to shut the fuck up all evening. And she shoves him in a closet and locks the door. And she is with her lover. They've escaped to this remote house and they are subsequently murdered pretty much instantly after this moment. Instantly after this child is locked in this closet, they are smashed and bludgeoned with a sledgehammer. And then we get our title shot, Sledgehammer. So we know what the fuck this movie is going to be about. Okay. A sledgehammer.
A sledgehammer.
Okay. And then we get another long shot of the same house. And a little text at the bottom of it lets us know that this is 10 years later. Where we're introduced to all of those supposed teenagers that all have like the same name, basically.
Jimmy, Joey.
Yeah, Joey, John, Joe, Mary, Jimmy, John. Carol. Like
Toe Jam and Earl.
Chuck. And they have rented this house for sort of like a weekend getaway. And two things I do want to point out, because I think this is important to remember, is one, again, this house is located in a very strangely remote area, and two, they are driven up by a mechanic who is taking their van back to repair it.
Mm-hmm.
This mechanic also mentions something about fixing it up so good, it performs better than a good woman on her wedding night.
It shifts gears more smoothly than a good woman on her wedding night. Some the transmission, yeah.
Yeah.
And that really has a...
An interesting, a good woman is what kind of gave me pause. Yeah. I said, what's a bad woman? But anyway, and that is important because there were also so many times where in this movie, I was like, why the fuck haven't they left this house?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why. Okay.
Because they don't have their van.
They're trapped. So that's important to remember. All right. They're very trapped here all weekend. And this weekend also starts off pretty normal. You know, it's your standard affair of drinking and food fights and... weird shots of frolicking and your classic teenage relationship drama. We've got some of the kids going through their own problems, right? It's a very standard affair. But things kind of take a turn when Chuck, sort of like, I wouldn't call him the leader, but I would say Chuck is one of the main characters or the one of the people they focus the most on. I wonder why. It's nepotism, because that's Ted Pryor's character. So it's clearly nepotism, but anyway.
This is the first 5 minutes of the movie.
No, yeah, okay. Yes, this is the first 2 minutes of the movie, taking it minute by minute.
Oh, boy.
But things take a turn when Chuck, who is planning a prank with Joey, Joey's also kind of like the prankster of the group. There's like a bunch of weird pranks Joey pulls on people
mm-hmm.
that never go over well either. So I wonder why he keeps doing it. Not important. And he suggests, Chuck and Joey suggest they hold a seance together in an effort to summon the spirits that are trapped in this house, but specifically to find out who killed that couple, you know, 10 years ago and what happened to the son. Because we get a little bit more context on the story because Chuck establishes a mood where he talks more about the murders that occurred. And he basically says, like, no one knows who murdered these people, but also no one knows what happened to the son here. They couldn't find his body. They couldn't find any trace of him. And from that point, Joey's upstairs, like playing little sound bites to like scare the shit out of all of the kids downstairs. And they're all like super jarring and crazy sound bites too. Just like, like really intense, weird things, whatever. But while they're pulling this prank, they actually end up summoning the spirit of this child who was trapped in the closet, but also the killer. That's what's kind of confusing, is it's like two for the price of one. Okay. And he is also, for some reason, 8 feet tall, mm-hmm. wearing the smallest clothes ever, which is kind of important for his character. Okay. And the scariest mask you've ever seen in your entire life, like for a killer. That mask alone, like, scared me so bad when I was first watching this movie. And also, he has the titular sledgehammer, which they kind of have been throughout, like, the kids' weekend experience, like, cutting to a sledgehammer, like, every once in a while to be like, remember, this is gonna come up later, okay, guys?
If you didn't know by the title of the film.
There's gonna be one.
Or the beginning of the film, yeah.
And this killer kills Joey upstairs and hides his body, so Joey's like missing, and also no one seems to notice Joey's missing for some reason. Like, except for Chuck at some point the next day is like, you know what, it's kind of weird that Joey hasn't been here the whole time. But whatever. And then, like, from there we just get like a bunch of weird shots of the house and people getting like stalked by this killer. But it's also, it's kind of supernatural too, because he sort of like summons himself. It's strange. But yeah, just slowly all of the characters, like Carol and Jimmy and John and Mary and Peter and Joseph, they all get slowly.
They lay in the manger.
They get murked. Okay. And I don't know, like, I don't want to keep summarizing because I feel like that's like a pretty good place to cut it off. Like, the point being.
Daytime buggy.
Sorry, guys. I had to work last night and I have to work tonight. Mm-hmm. It's a hard weekend for me. But the point being, this child has been summoned. And oh, also, in between like the scary 8-foot man like wandering the halls, there's also a child wearing the same outfit and the mm-hmm. same mask that is like kind of following around the kids as they're being like slowly stalked by this like supernatural entity. And it ends with like a big confrontation between like Chuck and then I think his girlfriend Joni, and they like fight the killer and somehow make it out of the house, and they're presumably fine, except we get a little ominous shot at the very end of the kid still stuck in the house. Mm-hmm. So it kind of seems like that spirit hasn't like been able to rest and won't be, and might still just haunt the house. And that's the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That is the movie.
I enjoy how much you call them all the kids when, well, and I yeah, know we're going to talk about it, but it never crossed my mind that they were supposed to be teenagers.
And it makes so much more sense, like much more sense now, because again, like there were some like conflicts, like I think Carol and Jimmy were like together. And
those are the ones that have sex?
Yeah. And
they
the
have
thing
sex
was,
without moving at all. They're just laying on top of each other without
like
any
a tiny little towel.
That's very teenager.
Jimmy's
yeah, just so you don't see his butthole.
You know, the other thing is it's his first time.
Classic,
but that like confused me for a little bit because I was like, oh, like,
yeah,
that's kind of an interesting plot line for these like grown adults to like, you know, still be virgins. Like, you know, you feel like, especially in the 80s, it's all about like 18-year-olds having sex, you know, but
yeah,
yeah, not 40-year-olds trying it out for the first time.
I know people age differently, so these people were probably all just like 25, but
yeah. I don't know.
People,
it's pretty intense.
People look older than me, and I'm really old.
Oh, okay.
No, especially the men. The men really take the cake on this one. Sorry, guys. Yeah.
They take the cake literally as well in this film.
Food fight.
Okay, so let's get into this thing. We've maybe kind of alluded that this isn't a film. It's not a film. It's a movie.
Yeah.
Why is it a movie? It's a shot on video horror movie. And so we have debated the merits of shot on video horror films on past episodes. We talked about it when we discussed Night Feeder.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit about it again, and we talked about I Need You Dead. And now we're back again with one of the very early examples of shot on video horror. This is claimed to be the first shot on video slasher. There was at least one other horror film that was shot on video before Sledgehammer, but apparently they kind of consider it cheating because it did have a bit of a theatrical release.
That's what I saw, that this was like the first straight to VHS horror movie.
Yeah, shot on VHS, went directly to the home video market. Yes. So other entries into the shot on video market were Boarding House. That was the first one, apparently. Blood Cult was an early example. And I will admit that I'm not well versed on the history of shot on video horror, so I don't know the entire history and all the things that came out around this era, so I can't speak with any real authority on these pieces of shit. But here's an interesting note. In an interview, director David A. Pryor was quoted as saying, "We decided to shoot on video because Nick Kimmes, the producer, who they found through a classified ad, by the way, Nick knew some guys who had a video facility for making commercials and such, and they were willing to go into this with us." So, you know, they just happened to be like, "Hey, we know some guys that have VHS cameras. Let's shoot it on that." I thought that was kind of interesting. And I don't want to overstep our thoughts and feelings, and I have another discussion topic that overlaps with this a bit later. But I wanted to rehash our previous conversations about shot on video film, shot on video movies in general. Did the quality impact your viewing experience?
Yes.
Hmm.
And I mean, I've gone on about this before, and I'm sorry. And I think video is really cool because the whole point of it is it's like a democratizing force, but it looks like shit. And also, like what Buggy was talking about, the slow-mo, the like effects, some of them actually ended up being cool because it was weird and it like, just the timing of it. But like, there's a lot of unnecessary slow motion. I actually read somebody saying a fixation on needless slow motion.
Yep.
And yeah, I think that it just, it's a really hard hurdle to overcome for me. At least this one, you could hear the dialogue.
True.
That's the one of the things I struggle with is when you can't see what's happening because the video is so shitty and you can't hear what people are saying because the sound's so shitty. And this, they managed at least to, there was no like clarity lost through the sound, even though there was clarity lost for other reasons.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I don't know. I think it's hard because I do have thoughts and feelings, but I have to save those for later.
Yeah, don't.
But I do think like that did obviously impact the viewing experience because it looks crazy, like cannot be overstated. Like this movie looks insane. But I also think in part because of how weird a lot of this movie is, it kind of like has a vibe. Like, I don't know, like it is bad looking, but it almost kind of works sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with that kind of more than other things we've watched because it's like wacky.
Exactly. It's like pretty weird for sure.
That's a great point about this movie kind of having a sort of a vibe to it because of the video quality, which was something I was thinking about after watching this because so these old VHS shits always look pretty bad. But there's kind of a spectrum where you have some movies that are shot on video, but they're shot well. The lighting's right, shot compositions, film angles are all done professionally, but it's shot on video. Sometimes I think that's almost worse than the shot on video horror films that are almost amateurish, that feel like some gritty porn or like a sketchy homemade movie that you're not supposed to be watching or something. And I think this kind of leans into that camp. But there's, you know, to that point, you also can end up with the like shitty college film project on that end of the spectrum as well. So you never know what you're going to get, but this definitely kind of looks like a porn, especially the first scene. You're like, is this?
Well, and part of that is what the actors look like.
Yeah.
The actors just like look like porn actors.
And the acting itself.
And the acting smells like porn acting.
Yeah, it smells like it. Yeah.
It sure does smell.
But the sex scene does not smell or look like porn
sex.
That
sex scene.
You know, some several critics pointed this out, and I agree. The lighting was done well enough where you never are plunged into darkness, as you noted, where there's no scenes where you're like, I can't actually see what's happening.
Yeah, because that does happen sometimes where you're like, okay, this is supposed to be scary, and I can see like somebody's shoes on a flight of stairs, and that's like all I can fucking see because they couldn't actually, or they try to film at night and they don't have yeah, the equipment.
This film has a this movie has a hazy look to it, which I'm wondering, there's an old technique where you'd smear Vaseline,
yeah,
on the lens to make it kind of dreamy. And I don't know if they did that or if it's just, you know, shitty video quality.
Or maybe it was the camera got involved in the food fight.
Yeah, it could have.
It looks cool like with... there's smoke just like all in the house, like at all times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a fog machine in there.
That might have just been your room.
It might have just been. Yeah. It's strange. It's like it, there's fog in my room even when I turn this movie off.
Oh my God.
Daytime mom.
So yeah.
I'm sorry.
This is an this is an interesting example of a film that looks like shit, but it has some charm because of that, maybe. I don't know. It does lend something to it.
Yeah, it didn't like try and dream too big and then the like medium was couldn't hold it, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. Okay, let's get into my favorite topic that I have on our list. And I'm really excited for this because I think there's a hot take here that it'll be fun to discuss for multiple reasons. So whether it was purposeful or not, and it could be that the writing and the filmmaking was just so sloppy and amateurish that you don't really know what's going on, but we appear to have a slasher that is also supernatural. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So it might not make perfect sense, but I think there's a strong case that this is a supernatural slasher film. Supernatural slasher movie. And there is also a possible satanic element to it. Mm-hmm. So I saw one quote on Random Movie Musings that said, "I think what the movie is trying to convey is that some satanic force caused the kid to kill his mother and her lover, because at some point there is a bloody upside-down pentagram on the wall. So I believe that was the implication, but I don't know, as the bloody wall decoration is the only clue you get." And I feel like I didn't really clock that when I was watching it. I noticed it, but it didn't really occur to me that, oh, maybe this is an explanation for why this is happening.
I wrote it down. I was thinking about it. Yeah, so it's like two of the teenagers, I think the ones that fuck,
Carol and Jimmy,
they're like posed at a table and there's a pentagram behind them.
Yeah, and it's like even weirder though, because what happens is like John somehow right before that is like summoned into that room. Like
he's
literally
the really
like runs. Yeah.
Guy.
Yeah.
One of the teenagers in quotation marks runs into this hallway.
Uncle John.
And he
your
tries
teenager.
To open this one door and he can't.
Mm-hmm.
And he like transports through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like basically coerced into opening this, like the closet, the infamous closet where this kid was locked in.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like almost like he released. It, like it's weird to me because there's like a skull
there's
in the closet.
Skull, so it implies that the kid is actually dead.
Yeah, like that he died in the closet.
So it's like a cursed object kind of. And then there's a satanic.
Yeah. And then like he turns around and Carol and Jimmy and the pentagram are there where it's like, whoa, like what the fuck just happened there?
And I was kind of thinking, I wonder, you know, where this fits on the timeline of the Satanic Panic. And so it came out in 1983.
Yeah.
And like the big first kind of big case, the preschool case in California, where all those preschool teachers got accused of like doing weird satanic things with preschoolers, that was also 1983.
Oh.
And the book that kind of kicked it all off, Michelle remembers the book where the Canadian patient and her shrink together wrote this book about how she'd been like satanically ritually abused. That's 1980. So
okay,
they definitely, it hadn't like hit its peak, but it was definitely, you know, it didn't come out of nowhere. So the satanic panic stuff was probably like in the air.
Yeah.
And this is California. You know, the preschool stuff happened in California.
That's interesting.
I don't know if this was before, during, or after that, but the book had already become a thing. So
that is fascinating. And maybe that was a detail that they jammed in at the last minute because this popped up in the news and they were like, this is a good explanation.
But it's just, it's weird in general because like when we were talking about this off of the podcast for a second where it's like kind of unclear, like the child is obviously the killer in like this circumstance, but it's weird because they do imply that somehow this child died in a closet, but also murdered his mom and her lover.
While locked in the closet,
which is weird. So maybe, yeah, like, this does kind of help, like, tie that together, where it's like there's another element involved.
And the, child and the man are the same. And it's like, how did he become a giant man if he died as a child? But so maybe they were just like, this look, because it is scary, kind of.
That is, like, this cannot be, like, emphasized enough. There is something so uncomfortable. And I think that's also where some of the weirder aspects of it, like the slow-mo and like the weird quality of the camera, like, really work, because there's something so uncanny about seeing, like, an 8-foot man in, like, tiny clothes walking down a hallway with, like, the weirdest mask on.
It's like a little clear plastic half-face mask.
Also, his mask is a little bit too tiny for his face. Yeah, as well.
It's, like, really, it's super weird looking. And it also kind of comes out of nowhere. And I think that's also what adds to it just being as creepy as it is that's not what you're expecting, honestly. Like, for this killer, you're not expecting that at all. Mm-hmm. And it looks really weird.
Yeah, I do like, I think that is the most effective part of the movie for sure, is just the nature of the killer.
Definitely. Okay, I want to come back to this, but I have another thing to introduce in this discussion. So obviously, when we think about supernatural killers or supernatural slashers, Freddy is the top dog, kind of invented this subgenre to some extent. Nightmare on Elm Street came out in 1984. Sledgehammer came out in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
So is this killer the first appearance of a supernatural slasher?
When is Friday the 13th is after?
Well, here's a couple interesting details. So Friday the 13th came out in 1980, but Jason did not become a supernatural until Friday the 13th part 6.
Oh, he just died. Spoiler alert. He just died and his mom was killing.
Yeah. So,
because she was mad that they the first bullied. Yeah, that's right. He wasn't the actual.
Part of the chronology is that he's not actually supernatural definitively until part 6 in 1986.
Interesting. Okay.
Now, Michael Myers. This is an interesting one because there's always been an ongoing discussion or debate about whether Michael is supernatural. And a lot of people say, yes, obviously he can't be killed. He's sustained so many fatal wounds that he has to be supernatural. But here's the interesting thing about Michael Myers is that other than being indestructible, he doesn't really have any other supernatural abilities. You know, he just can't be killed.
That's pretty supernatural.
Well, it is.
No, I'm kidding. But
in the fourth movie, well, it gets weird because then they do like this whole thing where it's the ghost of Michael Myers, same that they do with Jason, where it's like they died and then they came back now they're actually a ghost.
So they build these supernatural elements into both the Halloween franchise and the Friday the 13th franchise kind of later. And there's more of an argument for Michael Myers being supernatural from the get-go, but I can't think of an example that's sort of narrowly focused on the slasher subgenre. Obviously, there's a lot of supernatural forces that kill people in horror, but when you're just talking slashers, there's no one really other than Freddy that's just like, hell yeah, this guy is 100% supernatural.
Right.
But this dude in this movie, he has to be 100% supernatural. Yeah.
He's not alive.
There's no way.
I mean, he's not alive, right?
He can't
be. There's not like some other man.
There's a skull in a closet, and also he keeps shrinking up and down, and also like
you can't do that if you real.
He keeps shrinking up and down.
If you a real person,
I hate when I get shrinking down. That's the hardest.
Fuck.
No, wait, up. Shrinking down is normal. I am shrinking down. Shrinking up is hard to do.
I'm shrinking.
Shrinking up is hard to do.
Okay, so this guy's supernatural. What's his deal? Like, why is he supernatural? We talked about maybe because of Satan, but
Satan is a red herring or an afterthought.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. They threw it in there because maybe they were like, oh, how can he have done that?
Or also like drawing a pentagram on this wall and blood looks pretty sick.
It looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I think maybe. And posing these bodies, like that would be creepy.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
So yeah, what's his deal?
Yeah, well, I mean, what can he do? What can he do?
He can
murder
people.
How did this happen? You know, because he appears, he disappears.
Right.
He can suck people through walls, yeah. as you noted. He transforms from a kid to a 6 foot, I think 6 foot eight, not 8 foot.
It
six
just
foot
seems
eight,
literally
which is still
that
tall.
6 foot eight.
But
6 foot eight is very
yes,
tall.
I believe Doug Matley or whatever his name is was 6'8".
And he was also a teenager.
he was but a wee
yeah,
boy.
Like, there's so many questions around, like, if the kid killed his mom and lover, did he then get back in the closet
yeah,
and die?
That's what's so weird.
Yeah, and he was locked in the closet. So maybe he died before he killed them?
Well, there is an there's an interesting quote in the beginning of the film where, you know, you assume that the mom just locked the kid in the closet, but she said, I took care of that little bastard. He won't be bothering us tonight.
Yeah.
So maybe she sledgehammered him first.
Where's the kid?
Don't worry about the kid. Took care of that little bastard. He won't be bothering us again tonight.
It's just what I wanted to hear.
Ooh. It's possible.
They don't offer any clues to whether or not that happened, but maybe maybe there was more darkness in that statement than you were led to believe.
She was a dirty hoe.
I mean, she was an asshole.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is.
It is confusing because it is like, kind of just doesn't make sense, and you just, but that's also what I think
is scary about it and kind of fun.
Well, that's it's a dream logic movie 100%. Like half of the dialogue they're just speaking over each other.
I love the dialogue.
Like I think honestly, like the director was just like, say stuff. Like I don't think they had like any actual lines. I think it was like, okay, the point is that
you're teenagers, you're having a party.
Yeah,
and Chuck's got to put a bunch of mustard on Joni's head at some
Somebody's got to get a beer poured on him.
Yeah.
Do you believe that, Chuck? He poured mustard all over my head. I could have killed him right there.
That's nothing. John does things like that in wars all day long.
I don't know about those guys sometimes.
Yeah, well, I do. I think they're all crazy if you ask me. Every last one of them.
I guess that's what makes them fun, though. But
that's a good segue to this next topic about the quality of this film. Is it so good it's bad? Wait, no. Is it so bad it's good, or is it just bad?
It's so good it's so bad. Good. I hate when that happens. It's like shrinking.
This
up.
Movie's definitely
I feel
so
like there's,
good.
Yeah. Sometimes I feel like some of these like goddamn Oscar award movies.
Oh yeah,
so
they're
good
so good. They're bad. Like acting is so good.
Right. Anyway, so we talked about the video quality sort of separately. So we know there's an issue there. But there are a lot of other problems with this movie other than just the quality of the video. So let's dig into some of these and kind of debate whether they're glaring flaws or fun character traits. You mentioned some of these long shots and these slow motion. Yeah. The opening house shot is crazy. I feel like this this movie might actually be known just for that opening house shot that never ends.
It's so long.
And it's shown again, too.
They show it like 3 or 4 times in the movie.
But then we have this early scene where they're unloading the van.
Oh, my
and
God.
And like, it keeps going. And at first, it's like, oh, this is hilarious. It just keeps going. But then it just keeps going. And you're like, what the fuck?
Like an even weirder part where they're throwing their bags and they like throw one of their friends in the pile. Like, did you guys see that? Like, they're in between the duffel bag. There's just one guy who gets like thrown in the pile.
And is it also Jimmy
was like,
or Joey?
How many friends do they have? Like for a second, it was just like a pile of people. I was like, are there 12 fucking people coming in this house?
Yes, indeed. But then, you know, we have this other early scene with Joni and Chuck, and they're having their important relationship talk. One of handful.
Oh my
and
God.
Then they
God
just start
this.
Walking off in slow-mo with some guitar and flute music. Except they literally just walk slowly for like 2.5 minutes, maybe 3 minutes, and that's it. Nothing's happening. They're just walking with the music. It's
no, what's
crazy.
Also weird too, because there are some weird parts in it. Like there's this part where Chuck like grabs Joni by like the scalp, and
doesn't
like,
he put like a beer can on her head? Or
oh, he puts a beer on her head. I have that in my notes.
Back too, like so hard. And then also like right after Chuck's like, you know, Joni, I love you. Like we're gonna figure it out and. Come on, like, just have fun. She's like, okay. He's like, okay, great. And he, like, throws this bag at her and is like, now get me another beer or something. Do you guys remember that? Because that also, like, cracked me up. I was like, does this movie know it's funny?
I
don't know if it does or not.
Does this movie
not? The workout is funny too. So I think maybe there's just some underlying like sense of humor.
Yeah.
Yeah, could be. I mean, the acting
is so bad it's good. The acting is so bad it's good.
It was mostly their friends. They might have cast a couple people to be in it, but mostly as people they knew. The director's brother, Ted Pryor, we talked about him for a second. He's the main character, Chuck. He was also a Playgirl centerfold.
Mm-hmm. Whoa.
And he starred in a handful of other of David Pryor's films. He was in Killer Workout. He was in a movie called Deadly Prey, which apparently is just him with short shorts and no shirt running around the
Rambo.
Whole movie. Makes sense.
Deadly Prey Girl. Goodbye.
There's a lot of scenes in this movie that don't make any sense. We kind of talked about the supernatural killer not being 100% clear, but there's a scene early in the film where I believe it's John goes to investigate a barn, and he's searching around the barn, and it feels like it should be leading up to something, but then he just doesn't find anything. And I saw one critic quote, "The scene has no purpose and meaning. It's just a few minutes of some guy casually walking around a room," which is true. Like, they didn't find anything in there. Like,
no.
There's no reason for it to be there.
But I think another thing, and I know someone, like, I think you read an article, you did too, about the layout of the house it's also being insane. Like, how are there that many staircases in this house?
It's so boring.
Like, hallway too is like one of the weirdest looking hallways I've like ever seen in a movie. Like, it's so like small, and why is it so long, but there's like only a couple of doors? Like,
well, that's because Cody found out that they filmed it in a 2-bedroom apartment.
Yeah, that was a funny segue. That was going to be the next thing I mentioned. So
yeah,
the lack of set design. Apparently they had a set designer who quit right at the start of the movie to go like work at a bar or something, because they obviously were like, I'm not going to make any money on this thing. I'm going back to my bartending job or whatever.
Yeah.
So here's a quote from the interview with David Pryor that I thought was interesting. "One of the biggest challenges was trying to make the movie look like it was shot in a multi-room house, which I don't think we really did. In truth, it was shot in my 2-bedroom Venice Beach apartment. But the even biggest challenge was getting it all done in 7 days. That is nearly impossible. And as such, we ended up very short of running time, and that is why all the slow motion was put in."
There you go.
It was to extend the running time. So
ding, ding, ding,
he
ding.
Knew
like,
it.
He admits it. It wasn't just like a, you know,
a
we're
stylistic
trying. Yeah, we're doing this stylistically. It's like, oh, this movie's too short. Slow everything down.
Because I figured, like, there were some times where I was like, oh, this might be, like, for mood. But then there were way too many times where it's like, no, like, this is just fucking so obviously funny. For, like, filling up time. Like, there's no other explanation.
And why do things have to be a certain length?
I think they're
to be considered not a short or something?
I think, yeah, there is like a minimum length for a feature film. And I think it's like 74 minutes or something might be the minimum that you can. I'm not sure.
I guess that makes sense. Yeah, I just want one more on this. It was just like there was literally no visual interest. It was like it looked like suburban apartments I lived in like suburban Dallas, like white hallway. And there's almost something. That's almost so bad that it's fun, you know? Like
liminal space. That's what it reminds me of. It's just
so
like
maybe it
weird.
Gives some of your dream logic theory.
I think like I'm giving
credence.
It too much credit of like, wow, all of these things came together to make such an uncanny film. But I think it's just partially coincidence.
Could
but it kind of
yeah.
works.
But that well, is, yeah, like when what was that's what I was trying to say. You know, when you were talking about analog horror?
Yeah.
Is this like a long version of that?
I actually like I have for my thoughts and feelings a note where I can touch more on that, because the reason why I picked this movie is I saw this quick video essay about like the weirdest horror movie I've ever seen, and it was Sledgehammer, this movie.
Okay.
And it was him being like, this does feel like a pre-analog
horror
film.
That's what I was wondering, because it seems like it's the actual technology that the stuff you're talking about
mimics. It's like
mimics.
Trying to replicate, yeah, where it's like an actual one, except it's, you know, a little different.
And it's long.
And it doesn't really work. It's another example of like a movie that's like that doesn't, it's going to be like weird pockets of like empty filler space and like stuff like that, like it's hard to achieve that effectively
over this long.
Where I think again, like analog horror intentional, like you're saying, and this coincidence purely coincidence that this like worked that way.
Yep. So back to the set design just for a second, because I think it's interesting. The lack of set design is totally noticeable throughout this thing. Mm-hmm. It's just like, what? Like, there's nothing in this house.
Yeah, nothing on the walls, nothing. And there's not much furniture even.
No, it makes the film feel cheap at times, but then there's other moments where it's kind of effective. Like when the killer's coming down just like an empty white hallway, mm-hmm. it kind of works. It's weird. So there's definitely moments, and like you said, I think it's an accident. I don't think they thought this out. It just happened to be that when you put a big, creepy, tall guy with a weird mask
in a little apartment, in a little apartment house,
where like bigger. He's hitting his head on the doorway almost walking mm-hmm. down the hallway. Ugh. That's creepy. It's weird.
And I guess also in its defense, a house where a murder happened that's been abandoned probably wouldn't have a lot of furniture in it.
I guess so.
You know, it might have been like looted over the years or.
Yeah. Obviously, the plot is a little thin.
Yeah.
A lot of critics said that there's basically a non-existent plot. I wouldn't say that. I think that there's some, they tried to kind of build a plot into it. Another quote from this David Pryor interview, he said, "My initial motivation for making Sledgehammer was to prove that one of my screenplays was worth making. I never intended to be a director." Okay, so you at least wrote, you know, you wrote something, you know, it wasn't, you know, you didn't just put a bunch of people in a house and say, let's see what happens.
But no, I think that's kind of eats as a statement, though. He's like, I made this movie to prove that I can make content that's worth it. Okay.
I wanted other. This also.
And I agree also, sir. This was worth it.
Quote that I loved that I think it gets to the quality thing that we're still on. It's from this Bleeding Skull article. I don't know if you read that. It's, or that's the name of the website. The pace is like a reverse mullet. Party up front, business in the back.
I like it.
I just kind of like that.
Yeah.
Licensed by the United States of America and the government for which we stand or something like that. I forget how it goes. Gentlemen, I think it's time we get pretty shit-faced.
There are some things that kind of work. I think they're unintentional, but some of the strange video effects combined with this bass heavy synth score that's put into it, which I thought that was actually interesting. At the start of the film, there's a note that's like, crank up your bass to have the most, I don't know.
The most bass.
Yeah, the most bass. I don't know, just like to have the best experience, like crank up the bass on your system.
Did we do that?
I mean, these are kind of basic speakers anyways, but that combination of the video effects and the synth is kind of Lynchy at moments.
Yeah.
And I think that's totally an accident, but some of that kind of works. Definitely think some of the music and the sound was kind of cool. And some critics had said that it sounds like somebody just got their hands on a synth and were just mashing down a couple keys. And I kind of don't agree with that, even if maybe that is what they were doing. For some reason, that kind of worked. And like we said, the killer is pretty creepy.
Yeah,
even if it's
super weird.
And that's probably a low budget, you know? They just went and got a shitty plastic mask, and that guy was real big, and he had a big face.
And it worked. But then there's moments, too, where, like, they put, like, a little tiny flannel on him and, like, tiny jeans where it's like, they were like, you know, this will work, right? Like, this will be kind of weird looking. And
we found,
does.
Like, your biggest fear is, like, fat man in a little coat.
Fat man in a little coat.
It's a clear mask.
Large
tall,
Persian.
Large
Persian.
Large man in weird clear mask with tiny clothes.
There is something.
My nightmare.
I mean, that's just, you know, one of those general signs of mental illness you see is like people in the wrong clothes is scary.
It's
whether it's the wrong weather or the wrong size.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's like an indication of like weight, but it just looks weird. Like it also makes him look bigger too, like because his clothes are so small,
and
it makes him like 12 feet tall.
Put it together that the small hallways are part of why. Yeah. I mean, because he's fucking huge, but also just like, yeah, you put a big guy in a small
hall. And it's like kind of claustrophobic too, because there's a couple moments where like Joni, I think, is running from him. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because they're in such a small hallway too, it just like, it kind of works again where you're like, oh God, like this is creepy.
Mm-hmm.
So long story short, the quality of this film is dubious. But let's talk about something else that I think is great. Seances.
Ooh, I love a seance.
Last episode, we talked about how much we all love a good seance scene or a scene with a medium or a fortune teller or something like that. And surprise, surprise, we got another seance scene in this film. What a coinkadink.
Yeah.
Although I gotta say, this one's kind of weak, although it is also kind of funny. But it also serves as the catalyst for the shit starting to hit the fan. And what do you think about this scene? Did it feel like a turning point? Were you into it? Was it just random?
I was into it. And I think it's like how they introduce the it's the vehicle for which the supernatural killer returns to the house. But I don't have much more. I don't remember it that well because I'm a little dotty.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think it definitely is also the best looking scene in the movie. Mm-hmm. Like the mood lighting really works. And honestly, like I'll give Chuck his flowers. Like he has a good seance voice. Like it works. But other than that, yeah, there's not much to say. Like it looks kind of cool.
And
moody wise.
Are creepy. That's just all there is to it.
But there are definitely other parts of it that make it a little less cool.
Well, it is funny because, you know, you think about a seance and it's usually like, we're here to summon the spirit of whatever or whoever, and we're going to commune with the dead. And this is just Chuck telling a scary story for a handful of minutes, which is basically the story that we're introduced to at the beginning of the film of the mom and her lover being murdered. And during this scene, they reuse every second of footage from the introductory scene throughout the telling of the story, which is hilarious.
Perfect.
Not even like clips or flashbacks. It's the entire scene again.
Yeah, they just keep sandwiching in between Chuck like telling the story, which is like so funny to me.
It's pretty pretty brilliant. But you know, we learn that the seance is all a gag, which brings up a big question. If it was all a gag, why does it awaken the spirit of the killer? You know, it's not like they had any actual magic. He was just telling a scary story and they had some sound effects on a tape recorder.
Well, Chuck, I think, does say, like, if there's, like, spirit, answer me. Like, he is, like, he does, like, call out to the spirit. But it's part of the prank, though.
Tonight, we're going to find out who it was. We're going to call upon those spirits and find out who or what killed them. Everybody ready?
Yeah, I didn't clock that.
It's like fucking with a Ouija board, no, man. You never know what you're going to get.
Because like,
I guess so.
For part of the prank, he's like, spirit, answer me. And then Joey plays a clip where the spirit's like, you dare give me instructions?
Joey's the one that looks like Oats, right?
No, Joey's the...
Joey's the one
prankster.
That disappears.
Jimmy's
he
the
gets
guy.
Murdered first.
Jimmy's the porn stash guy.
Okay, that's the guy who looks like Oats. Mm-hmm. Got it.
Yeah. The sex with no movement guy.
Oh my, I like keep thinking about, because there's also just again like a towel barely covering his butt. It's not even part of the like comforter. Like they literally just threw it.
Oh shit, we can see your ass.
It's cracking.
Tim.
It's just I can't.
Let's put a towel over it.
It's like the smallest towel too,
which is so funny because I mean there's some this is completely getting away from the seance topic, but there's a little bit of nudity, but you'd think with like an 80s slasher where it's kind of the whole thing is like let's show nudity, there isn't very much in this. Like
no.
They kind of like shy away from it a little bit,
but
which is funny.
Show a weird part where they like close up on like Carol and Jimmy, like right where like they would be, you know, like connected. Like it's so weird
where a man and woman connect.
Like, they literally quickly. They like zoom in on it really quick to be like,
just so you know, they're fucking.
Except again, Jimmy.
But they're not moving.
A plank. No, he's just on top like a plank.
Laying perfectly. It's like, you know, children pretending.
It's what's the Mormons do? It's soaking. That's what they're doing.
Oh, where they put it in and then don't move.
Yeah, that's what.
Okay.
Isn't that normal?
Maybe that is. Maybe they were Mormon. Maybe that is a detail we didn't pick up on.
Oh.
Bunch of Mormon.
They're Mormon kids. Teenagers. Yeah. Yes, that's exactly.
That's why.
That scene does end in a pretty good sledgehammering.
Yes, there's
probably
a good
one of the best sledgehammerings in the film. So there's a seance. You know, back to seances.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
Seances.
I don't have much more to say about seances other than I thought it was kind of funny that a gag seance ended up being the catalyst for bringing a killer spirit back into being and being the downfall of everyone.
I guess, yeah, it's just like part, that's probably an actual intentional detail of the plot is it's like, yeah, these teenagers fucking around and they accidentally.
But yeah, it is a weaker seance, I think, because of all of the weird elements. But it, yeah, like I think that is one of the only times where they purposefully were like, oh, they're kidding around. But then oopsies, they might have actually done it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's some funny dialogue in that scene.
We wish only to learn the truth of how you were killed.
Truth? What truth? We were murdered in cold blood by a raving maniac.
Who did it?
I can reveal this to only one.
Who?
John.
Me? What?
We want to drink your blood.
Bullshit.
There's so much funny dialogue.
It's all so ridiculous.
That's back to the so bad it's good. I think the dialogue is, besides the like killer being actually scary, the dialogue is what pushes it to so bad it's good for me.
Yeah. Okay, so we always like to watch the end credits of films and fuck all these streaming services that force us to go to the next goddamn thing in the algorithm or give you 3 seconds to hit the little button that says fuck off or whatever. But,
hate that shit.
You know, we had a DVD, so we didn't have to deal with that. And as we were watching the end credits, we discovered a handful of interesting names of individuals that worked on this film that we thought were notable. So I thought I'd read some of them off and their roles in the film. So the choreography was done by I See None. K-N-U-N, I See None. Interesting name. Production assistant by Harrison Balls. Good old Harry, as they call him.
Love it. Love it.
The location scouting was done by none other than Mike Hunt.
Oh, yeah, Mike Hunt. I forgot that was, yeah. That's the first one I saw, I think, where I was like, wait a second. Yeah.
One of the secretaries listed was, you know, good old Jack Mehoff.
Yeah.
M-E-O-U-G-H, Mehoff.
Mm-hmm.
The special sound effects were done by IP Freely.
That's the Mad Magazine one I was thinking about. IP Freely. That was one of my favorite jokes when I was like 9. I like saw it in Mad Magazine and I thought it was the most brilliant piece of comedy writing. Anyway.
Indeed. And, you know, I didn't have a chance to dig into it, but I'm sure all these fellas went on to do great things later in their careers.
Yes.
But just some notable names I thought we'd talk about here that we saw in the end credits. Anything else y'all want to talk about before we get into some business and do our big one?
It's time to reverse mullet this.
Yeah,
bitch.
Business in the back.
Okay, let's reverse mullet it. A quick obscurity rating on this thing. IMDb votes 1,211. IMDb critics 57. That's quite a few critic reviews for such a low vote rating. Interesting dynamic there. Rotten Tomatoes reviews 0 as always. Fuck those guys. This is available and streaming 6, maybe 7 places. Actually, I think I might have added one to the list right at the end of my research there. All in all, 4.5. A little below the midpoint there. There seems to be a bit of a cult following around this film. It was featured on an episode of Joe Bob Briggs' The Last Drive-In Show. It was on a double feature with an even worse film called Things from 1989, apparently, which I have never seen.
Oh, Fangs?
Fangs.
Fangs?
Fangs.
You're just saying it as Joe Bob.
Yeah. In an interview, in the interview that I read with David Pryor, the interviewer asked, did you ever think that Sledgehammer would become the cult classic it is considered today? And he answered, to be honest, I am not at all certain that it is a cult classic. I mean, I know there's a handful of guys out there who like it, but it just doesn't seem like that many. But I would love to be wrong about that. And why people still like it after all these years, I am not really sure.
I love his responses.
That's fucking funny.
I love how it's always like, I don't really know. Man.
This movie kind of sucks. I don't know why people like it.
I actually hate this movie.
That is
so
funny.
Fuck. It's so good.
Okay. So we did all that. Let's do our big vote.
Do our big one.
Yeah, we're going to do our big one here. And as you know how we do, we count to three and we close our eyes for some reason. We'll do a thumbs up or a thumbs down and someone will probably scream when we open our eyes. And here we go. 3, 2, 1. Yes.
Okay,
and
good.
So the screaming has commenced. Completely unexpected result. I will tell you what we had here. It was one down and two up.
I'm glad it wasn't three up because that would have been ridiculous.
That wasn't if we all said this was a gem. That would be really
we would
funny.
Never live it down. What in God's name? But technically, that is a gem with a little bit of doo doo smeared on it.
It's a technical gem.
I guess I'll admit that I was the one down, and so I have to justify my vote.
Why are you
and
sane?
My existence.
How could you say that?
All right, so this movie is bad. There's no two ways about it.
Sure.
But it does have some charm. It is funny. It has heart. But unless cheap, cheesy shot on video horror movies are your thing, I'm afraid this just ain't it. I don't think you can point to any aspect of this film as an example of something that it does exceptionally well. As I noted, there's a few details that are semi-effective. You know, the killer's creepy. Some of the sound work kind of works, but it's not near enough to polish this turd in any meaningful way. I mean, it is fun, but it's definitely no LAA's Jabber. I'll say that much.
Oh, my God. You haven't watched it yet.
I know.
Your hopes are too high.
So that's what I got to say.
Well, I think this movie's a happy accident where unintentionally they made a movie that was weirdly kind of uncanny and uncomfortable in a lot of ways and also very funny. I also just sort of love that the director has no idea why anyone even likes it and doesn't like it himself.
So it's the humility that got you.
That like really
charming.
I just find it very funny, and I also like I would watch this movie again, and that's I think how I'm sort of like how I try to vote is based off of like would I recommend this, and I for sure would, even though I'm sure like most people would not like it at all, which is completely fair because
mm-hmm.
there are many things about this movie that are bad, and I it's bad, but I kind of love how bad it is, and it's special to me. So, yeah, that's why I voted as a gem.
Yeah, I have a similar. So I did watch it twice because Cody fell asleep the first time. And I wasn't mad watching it the second time, which some like even Schizo, we watched twice. Fell asleep and I was kind of like, all right, hurry it up. And that movie I liked maybe it was technically better, but I fucking thoroughly enjoyed watching this movie. Like, it's a piece of shit. It doesn't make sense. It looks like shit. But there's something about it that is weirdly charming. And it's not a good movie.
No.
But I would watch it again.
Me too. And that's why I'm like, I think I got a thumbs it up. Because, yeah, I enjoyed it.
Because that's the bar, right? For me, it's either recommending it to people or feeling like, oh, and this is my chance to say when Cody was joking about Fossum. The one that it's streaming on that is actually incredible is Night Flight. And I wanted to say, like, that is a phenomenal streaming service. But
hell yeah.
If we turned on Night Flight and this was on, I would fucking watch it.
Yeah, I probably would too. That's
yeah,
a fair
so that's,
point.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of all I have to say about it. It was bad.
It's bad.
But it was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
And a little bit creepy.
And yeah, there's some weird moments in this film.
I really love the shot of the house. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, that house shot. I wish they made it longer.
Yeah, it could have been a little
showed
bit
it
longer.
One more time.
And I will say, you know, I have a limited amount of patience for some of these so bad it's good movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I totally appreciate why people get into them and why they're so effective. Because there is something fun about watching something like this as compared to something that's just sort of mid slog along,
mm-hmm.
trying too hard, but not really
like failing.
Yeah. Not mm-hmm. really doing anything.
Or Derivative.
I would take I would take this over some like mediocre, like bland whore thriller that.
Or Oscar
just
contender.
Came out. Yeah.
Or try, what is it called? Like tour de force Oscar winning performance. I take this in.
This indeed. They should submit to the Oscars.
Yeah, they should.
Oh my God. It's got my vote. Yeah. Retroactive Oscar.
Okay, well, we did our big one in our business. And with that, it's time for something we like to refer to as special time.
Special time.
What do we got on special time?
Okay. This is going to be a short one.
Yeah!
You guys never thought you'd hear that from me. Tomo's like, damn, do you guys hate how much I talk? Like,
I believe it when I'll see it.
I want to talk about the Nutter Butter TikTok page, okay?
What? Like the actual yes. the snack? Okay.
Because it is weird. And I don't really know, like, it sucks because, like, there's no way to show people who are listening to this. Like, I'm going to play part of it. Maybe there's a sound. Yeah. It's really weird. This is from the official Nutter Butter page.
So it's kind of like the Wendy's Twitter.
And also look at it. Like, it's really weird.
This is an audio podcast. It's a peanut on fire on a tire swing.
You know, I can put sound effects in.
Okay, great.
In post.
You can? You can? Okay, but
she's
a little, like,
listened.
Context.
Never listened to the podcast.
She's never listened.
That's not true. I know you can do that. I just don't want to hear my own voice.
Me neither.
But I do want to get into this a little bit. Because this is really weird. So for some reason, for a couple of years consistently now, Nutter Butter has been posting on their official account the weirdest shit
I love this.
I've ever seen. They're also, their profile just says yes in all caps. And they've been like consistently doing this longer than like, I feel like they started part of this trend, but their entire feed is just these horrifying, weird like internet shit post videos.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know if this is like a marketing strategy or what, but it's working. Because also they get almost 5 million views per post they make.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a loyal following that doesn't even like Nutter Butters
yeah,
as a cookie.
Care for them.
And which that's crazy to me. I feel like Nutter Butter is like one of the best cookies out there.
I was going
to
ask, does anybody actually like Nutter Butter?
I like peanut butter.
I think they're great. But like, it's weird because now they just have a cult following of people who are following the story. Because also there's like weirdly a story occurring in this. But I just thought that was strange. Because also I think there's been like a sort of increase in brands trying to find a way to be relatable
mm-hmm.
to younger people. And like a lot of brands have Twitter accounts. Like you'll see Wendy's commenting on some random Twitter thing. Like, bitch, please. And you'll be like, whoa, how is that even happening? But I think it's funny that Nutter Butter said, fuck all that. Instead, we're going to make the scariest videos you've ever seen. Like a horse that has a head that is a Nutter Butter with a smile plastered over
okay,
that
I like
horse.
That. I do. I also think this is a great, you know, timely theme because it's capitalism season.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
yeah.
that is also weird because it is probably
Very
a marketing strategy.
Yeah, of course.
As
it's a
well.
Mark.
But it's also just like so strange
mm-hmm.
and I just wonder also how this was presented
mm-hmm.
how did they get the Nutter Butter CEO to be like yeah sure you can post disturbing content with Nutter Butters involved, like on TikTok and on, because they also have an Instagram that's the exact same.
Nice.
Like they've just completely wiped all of their normal posts and have been doing this for years.
Okay.
I just wanted to point out, if you're ever bored or curious, look up Nutter Butters Instagram, because probably no one listening has TikTok either. Real recognizes real.
You only old people.
Yeah, it's only
TikTok's evil.
Well, actually, a lot Instagram's of old people evil. Have TikTok. To clarify, there's like, a lot of old people who have TikTok and do weird stuff on there. But
yeah,
I just wanted to say, if you're ever curious about it, you should look at it, because it is pretty weird and funny. And that's my special time.
I'll check it out. I like a weird, quirky, somewhat creepy marketing strategy.
Yeah, it's strange. I'll send you some like videos too, so you can put some sounds.
Clips on YouTube.
They might, honestly. Mm. They probably have a YouTube channel as well.
All right, I'll check that out. I know how to use YouTube. You don't have to subscribe to it.
That's true.
All right. Well, we've entered winter. We're ready to cozy up. We're ready to watch movies. And next up, we got a pick by none other than Beth. Do you have a pick yet?
No. I might, but I can't remember.
Oh, okay. It's going to be a surprise.
Surprise pick to me as well.
Heck yeah. Okay, go put on your snow chains and put on your dick chains.
No.
Whatever you do, please avoid the LA AIDS jabber.
Oh my God, cannot wait. That's my pick. Oh, what if I just scoop you and should. I take that? Ha! Oh, actually, I know what my pick is.
LA AIDS jabber?
Yeah, it's LA AIDS jabber. No, it's Prey.
Oh yeah, that's right. Prey.
But not the new Prey. Prey from?
Deadly Prey, featuring Ted Pryor.
No. Yeah, we're gonna go on a full Ted Pryor deep dive.
Yes, this is now
Ted Pryor.
Actually,
hunt.
Yeah, we've switched gears entirely. We will no longer be.
We only watch movies.
I picked a movie
Ted.
From October from the October list.
1977, I believe.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. That's cool. There it is. You heard it here first, and I heard it here first as
Fun.
Well. Yeah.
Still going back to that October list. It's
yeah, I just
off.
Felt like I'd pick one too, because that one I enjoyed.
Cool. All right. So we're gonna be back in a couple weeks with an episode covering Prey from 1977. So go track that down if you can and eat all those fucking leftovers that you left on the back porch.
Eat your Nutter Butters.
Or the donkeys do.
Your Nutter Butter. Or else.
Dirt dogs on a gym hunt. We'll be right back.